Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
If you like your true crime like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.
Warning. On this podcast, we take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Although, we may attempt to lighten the mood at times.
Our episodes contain graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. I can't take you anywhere, Neil.
What would I know?
The coffee incident. I think we need to talk about it.
Right. That's never happened to me before. So I think
a lot of lads say that, don't
I think
they?
It were their I think it were their cups.
I thought you were going to say I think it was their coffee.
No, I think it were their cups.
Do you want to talk them through it or will I?
I can, because you'll make it seem worse than it was. So a friend of ours recommended this coffee place. We were going to their gaff. So me being the nice guy I am, I was like, oh, well, I'll tell you what, I'll go to that coffee place, get the coffee, get some pastries.
That's the thing. It's more of a bakery. We were going for the pastries more so than anything, you know? Yeah.
We won't say the name of the place because I'm going to slag them rotten.
Well, also, you're not allowed for legal reasons, so you're not allowed back in the building.
Yeah. So you go up to one counter and it's the same as any other place. You go up to one counter and you order. But where you stand and wait for the coffee is right by the machines. Like up against the side of the coffee machine is where the cups and the straws and everything is. So luckily it was an iced coffee. What was it? An oat milk caramel latte.
Yeah.
Iced latte.
Iced caramel oat milk latte.
Yeah. She hands it over without the lid. So I got a lid and I put it on. And I wasn't happy. I had to check it was secure. So with both hands, I gently pushed down.
Yeah.
The cup crushed to like half its size.
I've never seen anything like it. Brute force it was.
Coffee went up like a fountain.
Yeah.
It went all over the window, the coffee machine.
All over all the straws, cups.
Window.
The fucking, the lids, the barista herself.
Oh, yeah. She copped it.
It went all over her, right? I didn't even notice. I don't know what I was looking at. I was on my phone, whatever I was doing. I wasn't paying attention. I heard the barista go, oh.
Yeah.
And I looked up and there was coffee everywhere. She was literally looking up towards the ceiling. At that point,
I could feel it running down my head.
Yeah, and then I looked at you, and you're there like, oh, like a little kid who's about to get scolded.
Yeah.
You didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So I just kind of stood there stunned for a sec, because I was just taken in. It was the aftermath.
I don't like to make a mess, you see.
Well, I didn't know what to do at first. You started grabbing napkins and trying to clean it up, and then I grabbed napkins once I'd taken in to help you. And started cleaning up. And she was like, no, it's fine. Don't worry. It's not a big deal. You know, don't worry. And she's trying to make Neil feel better. Meanwhile, we're mopping it up. I literally had to wipe coffee off of Neil's face and arms. It was everywhere. I don't know how I missed it. I didn't manage to get any coffee on me. I was stood like a step or so back.
Yeah.
And she was like, don't worry, like, it's actually better that it, you know, burst like that rather than, you know, if it just spilled all over the counter. I'm thinking, you're fucking lying. This is all over everything. Neil went to clean the window and just smeared it all over the place. At that point, she turned to him and said, honestly, it's fine. Leave it.
Yeah.
She was actually
she was
like
a bit more stern.
Yeah, it was, stop. You are destroying this building. and like I said, it was a nicer place.
Yeah.
We were the fucking, you know, the riffraff off the street.
Yeah.
Who'd walked in, shit this place up and then walked back out.
Yeah. There were four of us. We got four coffees and a pastry each and it were just under 40 quid.
Scandalous.
Yeah. But the reason why we can't say what it is, because I'm going to slag it rotten. The coffee, abysmal.
Love the coffee.
Pastries, stale.
No, I thought the pastries were nice. Nah. Now, I got an almond pastry. I didn't think it was almondy enough. You know I love an almond pastry.
Right.
Not almondy enough for me, Neil.
Right.
No, you know.
Yeah, I got a pan of chocolate.
Yeah, pan of chocolate, yeah.
And yeah, it was just stale.
I was surprised by the coffee thing because I really liked the coffee. Thought it was lovely.
Didn't even finish it.
You said it was too bitter for you, which usually you can drink a bit of coffee. I can't.
Yeah, I can drink a bit of coffee.
Yeah.
But it still has to have a nice flavour to it.
I thought it was lovely.
That was just bitter.
Mine was fine.
Maybe I should have added sugar to it, but I was trying to be
good. Oh, well,
you
usually put sugar in your coffee.
No, not if we go out and we get a latte.
Mm.
Very rare
do you know
put
what it,
sugar in it.
Do you know why you may not have enjoyed it? Maybe it was the trauma. Maybe your taste buds were reacting to the trauma you just experienced.
No, because I'd had to put some graft in to clean it up. So if anything, it should have tasted better.
Well, the hilarious thing is after, you know, because Neil was going through it, he was, like I said, in a state of shock after what he'd done to that business, to that woman. He took a step back and said, can you put the lids on? So I had to put the lids on each of these coffees because he didn't trust himself at that point.
I had to walk away.
No.
I couldn't hold it in any longer.
Yeah. It was I really wanted to laugh, but you looked so embarrassed that I didn't want to laugh then and there. Once we got into the car, we had a good laugh about it. We were cracking up.
Especially when we drove past and she was in the window.
She was, yes, as we were driving past, she was up cleaning the window and I said, oh, that poor woman. That was in the morning as well. You really fucked up her whole day.
Let's just hope she doesn't have a podcast because she'll be talking about
Confessions
it.
Of a Barista.
Mm.
The other thing I was going to say with the lids, because I had to put them on, I felt tremendous amounts of pressure to not fuck it up at that point.
This is it. So,
imagine I'd fucked it up as well.
So just as it happened, and like we're not sugarcoating it, there was coffee fucking everywhere.
Everywhere.
And she said, oh, you've actually done a good job. There's not actually that much gone. And it's like, look around the building.
It's up the fucking walls. What are you talking about?
So then while she's making the rest of them and there's still coffee everywhere, the male barista comes over and gets a cup and starts making a coffee. And I'm looking like, that's fucking covered in coffee.
And that was the caramel iced latte. So it was like stickier. Because the syrup.
Yeah.
It's just fucking absolute mess. Do you know what the container looked like once you had got your hands on it?
Mm.
If you get like a Coke can and you just stamp on it.
Yeah.
The way you crushed it, I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Yeah. I did say to her, I swear I have a brain.
Yeah.
You know, because everyone was looking at me like, how did you manage that? I was trying to put the lid on.
I don't think you should have said it. It just made it kind of awkward. We're all just kind of stood there like, oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a woman as well buying bread or some shite and she was just at the side kind of like, huh?
Yeah.
Look what happened there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She looked at me like Anne Robinson.
But you know what? Can you not put the lid on the coffee though?
I usually can.
Not you. I'm not asking you, can you actually do this? I'm saying, listeners, give us your opinion. Do you think when you get a coffee, they should leave the lid off? Or do you think it's like, well, finish the product, put the lid on and hand it to me?
I'd say leave it off.
For the coffee or for the sugar and stuff?
If you're getting sugar sweetener.
But you can take the lid off yourself then if you want that.
You can, but it's just an extra step, isn't it?
I don't know. Maybe that's just maybe me. Because again, I get very anxious. Like when I put a lid on, you've seen me. I'm there going round it and fucking pressing it on, fucking like...
Yeah, I put my hand in like
The only way I can say it, but people don't know what I mean. Chris Eubank Jr., he used to wear these gloves and he'd put his hands in a certain way so it, both gloves together made
yeah.
this
Yeah, pattern. You do That's, like a whole hand thing.
It's like a triangle.
No, I'm like, you know when you put tinfoil on a dish on like leftovers? I'm there like crimping it around the whole thing and then I'm there like giving it a little fucking pull and like making sure it's not going to come off. Like it's like fucking... Right.
I put the lid on.
It's over the top.
I did put the lid on.
Yeah.
And then I looked and I thought it looked like it weren't on.
A bit of a tilt on it.
I thought it were a bit crooked.
Yeah.
So I thought...
It was.
Well, we're a flat surface. So I put my hands in like a triangle shape with yeah. a hole in the middle and pushed down.
Yeah.
Like I were giving it fucking resuscitate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. It only needed one.
Yeah.
And it fucking blew up the wall.
Mm.
The best bit, well, not the best bit, but when we were telling our friends when we got to their house, Megan went, I didn't even look at the ceiling. Was it on the ceiling? It's like, them ceilings were about 25 foot high.
Because when I noticed, that's where the barista was looking. She was literally looking up. She was like, oh my God, it's all over everything. But yeah, no, like you said, at least it was a nice coffee. If that had been a hot drink, that would have been it.
Would have gone home. If I'd have got hot drink all well, over me.
You were covered.
I'd have gone home.
Yeah.
If I'd have scolded myself in front of everyone yeah. and made myself look a twat.
You did make yourself look a twat. You just didn't scold yourself.
I'd have gone home.
Scold yourself. Scald yourself even.
I'm just glad, but the coffee was shite because I never have to go back there again.
The coffee was good.
No.
Okay.
Fucking terrible. Unless she did mine on purpose, like badly.
Mm.
Fucking terrible. One of the worst I've had. Not just in Ireland, total.
Why does it always have to be Ireland? Why do you always have to reference Ireland?
What do you mean?
Because you all, do you know the amount of times you, right, so this, I get you're saying like, of any coffee I've ever had.
Mm.
But the amount of times you'll have something, yeah?
Mm.
Food, drink, you could be going to an event,
yeah.
you know, a shop, and be like, oh, but back in the UK. We have this back in the UK. It's not like this.
I only said it in the butcher's the other day. So I bought some bread cakes.
Yeah.
You said they're the best bread
you've ever had in Ireland.
I said to the butcher, I went, these are the best bread cakes I've had while I've been in Ireland.
It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Because I've had better in the UK. In the UK.
In the UK.
Yeah.
You've had nicer bread.
Warburton's orange.
You know what? You can go and fucking have that for if toast. You want. But when we're talking about like fresh bread from a bakery.
Yeah.
The fact that you're like, oh, Warburton's orange, which is like, it's like I can ball it up in my hand fling it.
That's
at the
me
ball.
Toast.
Yeah.
It's the best for toast.
Yeah.
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 Like this baffles me how this product made it to Ireland. Lurpak.
I don't trust it. I've never
fucking
had it.
Beautiful.
I've never had it. I don't like that it's so pale. Why is it so pale? What's in it?
I think it's
what are you putting in that?
Lard.
What? I don't trust the colour of it. And also, I mean, that's one thing I will not have you say is saying you wish you had like British fucking butter when you're in Ireland. You got France and Ireland. We're there with the butter. We're giving you all Lurpak. You need. Fuck Lurpak. Oh, some hate mail now. you can't be in Ireland and give out about butter. You can't do that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Right.
Top okay. notch stuff over here.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, we have a review for you to read.
We do indeed, Neil. This review is from Lisa.
Okay.
I thought you might have an opinion on the name. You like it, you hate it. How are you feeling about that name, Lisa?
Either way.
Okay. Anyway, Lisa. Lisa said, lads, do as you're told. Love, love, love this podcast and your dynamic. I'm originally from Lancashire, UK, so I enjoy the northern... You okay, Neil?
Lancashire. Hmm.
Yeah. So she said, I enjoy the northern banter. And then she said, even though Yorkshire is not quite as good as Lancs. Hilarious and respectful. All the love from Lisa, Tasmania.
Well, she's clearly on drugs.
I said that weird as if Tasmania's her last name. She's from Tasmania.
Right.
Well, no, she's not from. She just said she's from Lancashire, but she lives in Tasmania now.
Well, she's clearly on fucking drugs. She's doped up on summer. Yorkshire's not quite as good as Lancashire.
I've never been. So I couldn't actually say.
Look it up. There's fuck all from Lancashire.
There's fuck all from Sheffield.
Henderson's Relish.
No, I'll give you that one. I'll give you that one. But Steel. Do you like what I said? I said a bit like
you.
Do
you like Richardson's Sheffield Steel Knives?
I mean, they're okay, but I wouldn't like write home about them. It's a knife, you know.
Fucking Lancashire.
We don't. I'm gonna sell you out now. We don't even have any in our home.
What?
And you being from Sheffield, fucking disgrace you are.
Richardson Sheffield?
Yeah, our knives aren't Richardson Sheffield.
Our knives, forks and spoons are Richardson Sheffield.
No, you bought the cutlery.
Yeah.
That was like a little protest you did.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't actually get the knife set because you're too cheap.
We did have the knife set.
No, we didn't. We never did.
I bought them from TK Maxx.
We never did, Neil.
We fucking did.
We did. No, you bought this horrible set. But we're getting off topic, right? We got rid of that. We're actually going to get some new knives.
Yeah, and they will be Richardson.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, crisis averted there. We can stop the arguments. Back to the review. I mean, again, Neil, I think we're doing something right. Like Lisa said, fucking do as you're fucking told.
Lisa, lanky bastard.
No, but like Lisa's saying, do as you're fucking told. Again, being abrupt, being ignorant and rude, just fucking leave us a review.
Yeah, I'll give her that for a lank.
Yous pricks.
Yeah. Like, what you fucking doing?
Rate and review. Come on now.
Like, I know we only have, like, 50 listeners, but...
Nah, 51.
Maybe, yeah. But why haven't we got 50 fucking ratings? Or 50 reviews? Piss takes. Now you've heard what I can do to a fucking coffee cup. I don't want to threaten or anything. But I decimated that fucking coffee cup with ease. Don't piss me off.
Do you know every time... We kind of joke about that, like being a bit threatening. I mean it like verbally. You always go to actual physical threats.
Yeah, I ain't got many words.
Right. Now, we do have another shout out, Neil. And I tell you, I have been hopped off me tits on caffeine because Indy bought us 5 coffees.
Where's mine?
But you don't get any. I used it all to get hopped up on caffeine.
I hope it weren't the one I burst up the wall.
No, I let you pay for that one. Don't worry about that.
Oh yeah, I did, yeah.
You did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Indy bought us 5 coffees and said, bit of a busman's holiday, but I listened to your podcast while driving to my job as a forensic scientist.
Oh.
Yeah. Absolutely loving the banter between the two of you, but also the respectful way the victims/survivors are commemorated in the episodes. You both rock. Megan, you're a star, and Neil is an antidote to toxic masculinity with his ability to emphasize and listen when it really matters. Keep up the crack.
I listen when it matters.
I mean, allegedly.
I just find it shocking that people with these professions listen to us.
I know what you mean. It's kind of like it's a compliment that people who actually know what the fuck they're talking about will listen to us two idiots.
Yeah. So, and praise us.
Praise us.
Like we've
that's,
had...
That's odd, isn't it?
Defence attorneys.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just... Why? Why are you listening to us?
I tell you what, on the other side of that argument as well, we've got some truck drivers, so some potentially dodgy bastards listening in.
Yeah. Probably got potential serial killers in the making.
When you say potential, they could already be at it.
That's why they're listening to us. They're getting tips from me. The amount of times I've gone, this is how I'd have done it.
Yeah. That's actually a fair point.
Taking notes.
Rein it in a bit, will you? But thank you, Indy. We appreciate you.
So, what have you got for us today?
Well, today, Neil, we are going to be talking about Peter Sutcliffe, also known as the Yorkshire Ripper.
Why are you smiling at me?
Well, because, right, I don't usually tell Neil what I'm going to be covering. But I did with Peter Sutcliffe because you would have figured it out whether you would, you know, happen to see what I was reading or overheard something on a documentary. And Sutcliffe isn't the most common name. And it's certainly going to trigger reaction from Yorkshire folk.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah, you were watching a documentary and I was in the sitting room playing a game and I was going to get a beer or something. And I just heard, like, up road. And I'm like...
Car on road.
She's listening to something fucking
northern. You shouted into me and you said, is there any of my lot on that?
Yeah.
Which there was later on, Neil. There was. There was some lads from Sunny Chef.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there any in my lot?
It's just hilarious, the distinction. It's like, that's West.
Yeah, yeah.
I have nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
Now, although I told you that we were covering Petey Sutcliffe, you did ask me what made me decide to cover him now. And that I did kind of keep from you.
Okay. Well, there's no update.
No, I'm not saying that.
He died of COVID or something, didn't he?
Ah, well done. You just ruined it for everyone.
Oh, sorry. What happened to him, by the way?
Well, you're going to find out.
Right.
You have to wait. Bit of patience here. No, what I was going to say to you is the reason why we are covering Peter Sutcliffe now, specifically, is that it was actually requested as a Father's Day special for you.
What?
Yeah.
Who's the father?
Peter's your father. Peter Sutcliffe is your father.
Who was that? Can I have one guess?
Yeah.
Is it our fucking Facebook group admin?
No.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm going to leave that to marinate and see. Right, okay, so this is going to be multiple parts. It's Peter Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire Ripper.
Hmm.
If you have until the last episode to figure out, see if you can figure out who among the listeners.
Right.
I set you up.
Okay.
Mm. It didn't take much convincing on my part.
I know who it is.
They asked me and I went, I've made a note.
I know who it is. Are we going to see him in December?
No.
Oh. I don't know who else has the balls to fucking request that.
Well, like I said, you've got a few episodes to mull it over.
Hmm.
Make an informed decision.
Okay.
So before we get into it, I'm sure you're all aware Peter Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire Ripper, is an enormous case. So, like I said, there will be multiple parts, and of course, we will discuss the murders. But for this episode, we're specifically talking about Peter and his background. Just wanted to note as well, for this case, my primary source was the book Peter Sutcliffe, The Full Crimes of the Yorkshire Ripper by C.G.C. Cook. Again, it's such a huge case. I felt it best to have a, you know, primary source of information, or else my head might have exploded.
Mm. Had a fabulous head of hair on him, didn't he?
He really did.
Yeah.
It was glorious.
Good beard on him and all.
A mane of hair, if you will.
Yeah.
Anyway, with that out of the way, let's get into it. Peter William Sutcliffe was born on the 2nd of June, 1946, in Bingley, West Yorkshire.
Eh?
Bingley.
Bingley.
Love that.
No, do you remember that Peter?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Eh? I'm going to Bingley.
Bingley is just it's a hilarious name, isn't it?
But right, basically, it were one of the paedophile stings. They'd gone to this lad going, oh, what are you doing? And they were saying that he was meeting like a 12 or 13-year-old girl. I don't know why I'm laughing. And they went, we know, but you're going to meet this 13-year-old girl. And he went, eh? I'm off to Bingley.
Yeah, it's kind of like Bingley has become a trigger word in this house because of that video.
He was getting so fucking like ignorant with him.
Yeah, it's the face he pulled. But anyway, Bingley.
Yeah.
Our favourite place in the world.
Yeah. Can I have another guess? Sugar and tampon.
No.
Okay.
You're going to have to let it go. Like, you can try and put it out of your mind for the recording.
Mm.
And then we come back for part two.
Yeah.
You can have another guess.
Put it out of my head.
Yeah, try.
Right.
Think about Peter. Think about Daddy Sutcliffe and Bingley.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. He was born to parents John and Kathleen Sutcliffe, who had met while working in a bullet factory. The couple became engaged in 1941 before John left to join the Navy. In 1945, while John was on leave, Kathleen became pregnant with Peter, and so the couple decided to get married before the birth. John left the Navy in 1946 and sought work in a local bakery.
Sorry, right, last time. Can I have one more guess this episode?
Right, go on.
Sean.
Bingo. Bingley. Can we use that for bingo now?
It was fucking Sean?
Yeah.
Right, just for everyone else, that's who I was buying a fucking coffee for when it went up the wall.
Yeah, it was.
Fucking prick.
Insult to fucking injury, huh?
Mm.
I'm actually glad you did guess it because you're already pissing me off. I could tell you weren't really paying attention. So at least that's out the fucking way. I'm actually surprised you didn't get it straight away. I really thought you would have. It's because I said listener. And yeah. you you know him in our day-to-day life. So it threw you off the scent a bit.
Yeah. The reason why I went for Facebook admin is because you talked to him the most about admin shit. My second guess was Raina. She'd be the one I would have gone for first. Because she's that sort of person. She's good with a bants.
In September of 1947, John and Kathleen welcomed their second child, a son named Thomas Arthur. Sadly, just 3 days later, Thomas stopped feeding. He was rushed to the hospital, but died just hours later. An incredibly difficult time for the family, and it seemed that they were struggling to cope. And as a result, Peter was sent to live with his grandmother, Lottie. While staying with his grandmother, Peter would often attend Mass and would later become an altar boy. When he returned to live with his parents, his mother was again pregnant, 4 months along at this stage. The couple's third child was a daughter named Anne, who was born in 1948, followed by another son in September of 1950 named Michael John, a daughter Maureen in 1954, and I believe the last of the siblings was Carl, born in 1960.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, they did have another sister named Jane, but I am unsure of where she came in the order of births. I didn't see a date for her.
They had a few then.
Also, why are only the boys being given middle names? Did you notice that? What's that about? Yeah. Why aren't the girls getting a middle name? What's going on there?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's something to note. As a young boy, Peter was quite petite and suffered from weak joints. He began to walk when he was around 18 months, which is slightly late, I believe, but isn't necessarily any cause for concern. Peter was very attached to his mother as a young child and would often be holding onto the fabric of her skirt and followed her wherever she went. This was something that was... You okay?
Yeah. I thought it started young.
Started young what?
Attacking women.
I think it was more of a sweet way. He loved his mother. Well, it clearly bothered you. And this was also something that was said to have bothered his father.
His father was jealous.
His father did not like Peter being close with his mother.
He's trying to pull a skirt down. See, you're saying it in a negative way about the father. He might have been fucking seeing something and going, I don't like this.
You won't be defending his father in a few minutes, so...
Okay.
As Peter began his education, it was noted that he was a shy, obedient child. Nothing too out of the ordinary, though.
I thought you were a scrawny lad.
What do you think I just said?
Did you just say obese child?
Obedient.
Okay.
Well behaved.
Yeah, I know what that means.
Yeah. You just don't know what the word sounds like.
I'm sure you said obese.
In 1951, the family moved to Cottingley, Bradford, which meant that John, who was now working nights, was travelling farther to and from work, as well as his many hobbies before and after his shifts, which often left Kathleen on her own to care for the children. And don't forget that his nights off would usually be spent getting catastrophically drunk in the pub. Now, following his nights out, it would not be unusual for him to become abusive towards Kathleen and the kids. His son Carl would later recall, quote, "We were all frightened to death of me, Dad. He were like a monster. He was never in the house, but when he was, he ruled the roost."
Yeah, but that's how it was.
When he...
Do you want to argue it with me? They can't make art is this fucking bad guy. That is what a father was. You were scared shitless. If you weren't scared shitless of your father... He weren't doing it right.
Right. Let me just finish what Carl was saying.
Mm.
And then we'll discuss what you are saying.
Okay.
When he came in drunk, we'd all sit there in fear. You didn't move. Whatever was on the television was straight off and switched over to what he wanted to watch, which was usually sport. Oh, Christ, he had a foul temper. I seen Maureen get a beating off him when she was about 15, and he once beat me black and blue when I was a kid.
Okay, well, that was a TV thing. My mm-hmm. dad used to do that. Not mm-hmm. pissed.
Yeah.
He used to do that.
Yeah.
He'd been working all fucking day.
But I don't think you should live in fear of your parent. You've just said, what did you say? It's how it should be? You should be in fear?
I said that's how it was back then.
No, but didn't you say that you should be in fear of your father?
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah, because if you haven't got that fear,
yeah,
that's when you've got the balls to turn around and go, shut up or fuck off.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that to my father.
Okay, but...
because of the fear.
I didn't live in fear of my father and I never once told him to shut up or fuck off. Not once.
Like, the fear of the father... There's the fear of the mother as well, but the father more. Like, if I did something wrong as a kid, my mum would fucking yell at me and what have you. And then she'd also add at the end, wait till your father gets home. And when she said that, then the panic set in. You'd shit yourself.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I'm here trying to debate. We've had this conversation before. We have slightly different views on parenting. But I mean, it's kind of redundant for me to argue it. Of course your father was scary. He was the Yorkshire Ripper. I mean, I can't think of a more terrifying person.
Are you trying to make us go viral by trying to make people believe
no, I'm not.
That the Yorkshire Ripper were my father?
It's purely for my entertainment and now the mortals.
Yeah.
Because I've said, long before the podcast, I've said this.
Yeah.
You know, also, guys, you know, go with your instincts on this. I flip-flop with this. I make out that Neil's biological father is Peter Sutcliffe, but I also make out that his actual father got away with it and was involved in it.
Do you know what, as well, you saying...
Go from either angle.
Do you know what? You saying, but this went... this started before the podcast? Yeah, it did. Because I remember...
As soon as you told me that your father was a lorry driver. As soon as.
No, but when I was working outside doing something and I was using a hammer and all I did... I did something with the hammer. It weren't like a trick or anything. I think I just put it down and I had it stood up, upright.
What, and I said something like, you learned that from your father?
You went, got hammer skill there. You learned that from your dad. I was like...
I don't even remember that.
Mm.
Anyway, back to Peter and his family.
Yeah.
Peter was not exempt from his father's abuse. When he was just 5 years old, his father smashed a beer glass over his head. And this was because Peter had sat in his chair.
Well, you don't do that. Right, this sounds extreme.
Smashing a glass over your child's head, your five-year-old child's head. Yes, it does sound extreme,
Neil.
No, yes.
That is extreme.
It is, isn't it? A tad.
But why did he sit in his chair?
It was also at Christmas.
So it was his one day off?
Who said it was his one day off?
Well, you said he worked a lot.
I said he worked in a bakery.
Oh.
I said he was always out doing stuff. He had, you know, he was very into sport. He was always out drinking with the lads, bants with the lads.
Yeah.
You know how it is, Neil.
Yeah. But no, that's a thing.
What?
The dad had his chair.
Right, well, I'm just going to kind of fucking throw a spanner in the works here. Only was it last week or the week before, you were having a go at me because I like having my specific seat. And now you're saying it's fine when it's the man.
No.
That's what you're saying, no?
No,
he has a penis. No. He can have his chair. Megan, you can't do that. You've got no right.
I wasn't saying that.
Mm. I'm just reading between the lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure it comes as no shock that John, the abusive, drink-fueled husband, did not have much interest in supporting his wife or participating in his children's lives. But that didn't stop him from seeing the negative. With Peter...
Constructive criticism.
You're really rooting for John, aren't you?
You're really against him.
Yes, I tend to be against abusive alcoholic parents, yes.
Right, so you're upset that he smashed a bottle of Budweiser around Peter's head at 5 years old, but we're forgetting it's Peter Sutcliffe. They should have done it with a brick.
I understand what you're saying, but at this point, it's a 5-year-old child.
Yeah, should have done it with a brick.
Do you know, of all the ways this episode could have gone, all the turns it could have took, I didn't see you, you know, fucking campaigning for the rights of Peter Sutcliffe's father, your grandfather.
Yeah.
With Peter already being a more withdrawn child, and without much socialisation outside of his mother's care, he struggled to make friends, and this began to bother his father. Another issue was that Peter did not share his father's enthusiasm for sports. With his father most likely viewing this as another flaw, their relationship suffered as a result. I really hate that as well. You know, like people who are into sports, and it's kind of, it's almost like it's the only way to bond with their child kind of thing.
Well, like me and my dad.
Yeah, but you happen to be into the same sports. Like your father got you into them and you did enjoy them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But when it's kind of forced upon a child and the child is kind of like, it's clearly not their thing, or they're only doing to make their parent happy.
Yeah.
You know, and if that is the case, I bet my dad fucking hates me. His father viewed Peter as a mummy's boy, and after witnessing Peter all alone during playtime at school, he thought it best to force Peter out onto the street to make friends with the other boys, which he did manage to do, but again, as a more timid child, if the kids began to play a bit rough, Peter preferred to sit this out.
Chucking coal and that.
Is that what they do in Yorkshire?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, you used to chuck coal at each other.
Chuck coal at each other? It's not cheap. Whose coal is this?
Well, it were back then. Like, at schools, you'd have big fucking piles of coal. And I mean, like, mini mountains of coal.
Right.
Have you never watched Kez?
Yeah, have you?
Yeah, he climbs on top of the fucking coal.
Oh, it's fucking years
ago. And he grabs it and he starts swatting it.
So did you do this or you just saw it in Kez?
No, I didn't do it. I was born in 89.
Yeah, but I just asked, is that what they do over there? Over yonder?
They did.
Yeah.
We're chucking coal at each other.
Yeah, but this is more your father's generation. I'm not even saying that taking the piss. Like, that's more his time.
Yeah, they
would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But not you.
They'd go chucking coal, scrumping.
Yeah.
That were about it, really, weren't it?
Wasn't much to do, especially in Yorkshire.
No.
Just fucking fields.
Like, do you know when you said about Yorkshire folk trying to make their like make it sound like their life's harder?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was playing with a toy and I stopped playing with the toy because I was done with it. And I wanted a new toy. My dad, every single time I wanted a new toy, my dad would be like, what's wrong with that one? Oh, I don't play with that one anymore. Do you know what my fucking toy was when I was a kid?
A stick. Yeah. Old ball and stick.
He went,
hoop and stick.
There were no hoop. He just had a stick. Christ, they weren't made of money. Another one, what they did, they'd stand at the top of a road when it had been raining and you'd got water running down the side of the road and they'd do matchstick racing.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'd do that and they'd do it with a stick as well.
Do you know what I honestly thought you were going to say when you said about you, your toy, and wanting a new one?
Mm.
I thought your dad was going to be like, you know, what's wrong with that? And you're like, oh, I just don't like it anymore. I thought you were going to say he bought you the new toy, but he smashed the old one or something.
No. No, my dad, he did go through a phase of messing about with my toys, though.
Making Barbie and Action Man?
No. Well, not Barbie and Action Man. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a Barbie. I didn't have many Action Men. No,
neglected, really, weren't you?
It would either be like Spider-Man, Batman, or wrestlers. I'd have loads of wrestlers when I was a kid.
I had a tractor.
So I had loads of wrestlers. I had loads of wrestlers, yeah? And then I'd go to school and I'd come back and like the heads would be twisted round, or you'd have one bum in another one,
Yeah.
Just loads of different scenarios I'd come back to.
I never had any of the WWE toys.
Oh, I had loads.
WWF at that point.
I had the ring as well.
My cousins did.
Yeah.
We'd go to their house and play with them, but we didn't have them.
And then as I got older and like I weren't playing with them, my mate's little brother was playing with them.
Mm.
And he had this, it was like the fucking entrance. And then you'd get the wrestler, you'd put it on the entrance and the music would play.
That's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, we didn't have that.
No. Well, you wouldn't, you know, north of England and all that, and the hardship you faced. During secondary school, Peter endured bullying, which led to him skipping school. He would leave the home as normal before sneaking back in and hiding out in the attic to spend the day reading comics.
Oh, see, we used to do that. So, like, when I had a key for house, yeah, and if I couldn't be asked going to school.
Yeah.
So my mum would leave before I did. And my dad, depending on his jobs, you know, because
yeah,
his jobs were different day to day. So I would sneakily look, if he was there, I would sneakily look at his jobs and see what time he was going to be at jobs. So like, say if I left the house at, I don't know, like 8:15.
Mm.
If he had a job at 9 a.m. and it were Manchester Airport, I knew there were hours.
Mm.
So I wouldn't bother getting on the bus. And I would be on the park where the bushes were, and I'd see my dad's car go past, and then I'd go up, go in house, and I'd chill there for a bit.
Bit of a lurker.
What?
Bit of a lurker you were, weren't you?
It's just strategic.
Well, the thing is, though, it's slightly different, though, because you're just little dosser bollocks wanting to bunk off school.
Yeah.
Poor old Petey, he was getting bullied quite severely.
Well, that's what he says.
Do you doubt the child, though? Stop thinking of, like, Sutcliffe as we know him. Do you doubt this little kid who was, again, more timid, more sensitive?
Was it the little kid saying this, or was it fucking Sutcliffe saying it?
Well, that's a fair point.
Yeah. Because this is after he got caught when he's saying all this shit.
Well, not necessarily.
You know, it's usually, my dad beat me, I wanted to sleep with my mother, and all this fucking, like, I got bullied at school.
That's what they say, yes.
Yeah, I got bullied at school, got twatted every day. You know, they say all this shit to make you think, oh, they've had a bad life. Oh.
Yeah, but some have had a bad life. It's not a justification for the choices they make.
Mm.
But that doesn't negate, you know, a fucking child being beaten by their father or fucking being severely bullied at school or, you know, what have you, whatever the situation is.
Mm.
Do you not still have, you know, feelings of compassion towards that child who's being treated that way? Okay.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
If you like your true crime, like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.
In 1959, the family moved again to accommodate the growing family, this time to Bingley, not far from his grandmother Lottie, who would often help out in caring for the children. In 1961, at the age of 15, Peter left school. He soon started a job as an apprentice engineer, and in his personal time, he became interested in engines, specifically motorbikes. After 7 months, Peter quit his apprenticeship and worked various jobs over the next few years. In 1963, Peter had his first run-in with the law. He was arrested for driving unaccompanied while on a provisional license. And again in May of 64 for the same offence, but this time he was also driving without his lights on. fucking prowler.
Prowler?
Why is he driving around with his lights on? It's a bit dodgy, is it not?
With his light... He didn't have his lights on.
No.
Yeah, but a lot of people do that.
Why?
They forget to put them on. Idiots.
So now you're... Of all the things that you're wanting to put on Peter as a child,
yeah,
when he's a bit older and he's driving around town without lights on, you don't think that's suspect?
I don't think it's prowler. I think it's just... You see it all the time. People just get in the car. If they haven't got automatic lights, like most of them have now, the amount of times they'll forget to put the lights on. And it's always baffled me. My dad's always said it as well. It's not the lights on, like the actual headlights. Because, you know, if the street's well lit with the overhead lights, then you might not fucking notice. But the lights on the dash... You get in your car and it's pitch black.
So where are we landing here? Are you for or against Peter on the no lights?
Bit of both.
Bit of both, okay.
But I don't think a prowler. Well, but yeah, fine the bastard for driving without his lights on.
This is the thing, right? Peter was done a hell of a lot of times for driving without a license over the years, and he received multiple driving bans, but that fucker would just not keep off the road.
I only said it to you, what was it, a week ago? We were talking about it because we know of people who've done it. Driving without a fucking license. And I've said, there was a lad I knew, he would get done, he'd get points on a license he didn't even have, he'd get a driving ban, he'd get the car took off him, and then he'd just go and buy another car for like 200 quid and just start driving that.
Yeah.
And they'd give him another ban, and another ban, and another ban. And it's like...
In Ireland, they're quicker to actually put you in prison for it.
Yeah, in the UK.
The UK, they're pretty lax, it seems, with traffic laws.
Yeah.
But I'm seeing a connection here. There's a bit of a correlation with the serial killer and driving without a license. Remember old Lenny? He kept doing this as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Serial killers and all that, as you would say.
Yeah.
Now, that same year, 18-year-old Peter obtained employment as a gravedigger at Bingley Cemetery.
Why is it always the profession these sort of people fucking get into?
Yeah.
So it's as if it's strategic to be around dead bodies and that.
Well, in Peter's case, I definitely think that's true. While working as a gravedigger, it was said that Peter developed quite a dark sense of humour. His co-workers spoke of various incidents where he showcased his unusual behaviour and humour, if you can call it that. There was the time when they had to reopen an old grave. His co-worker said that Peter brought out the skull and chased some schoolgirls with it.
Fucking
yeah. A different co-worker spoke of how he would steal rings from corpses. He was then said to have offered his sister one of these rings for her wedding, and when she learned how he'd gotten the jewellery, she was understandably horrified, and Peter, he thought this was hilarious.
But you know that with burying my jewellery?
Mm-hmm.
Right, if you said to me, say you'd got expensive jewellery, yeah? And then you're on your deathbed and you go, just make sure when you bury me, I want my expensive ring on and all that, yeah? I would say to you, of course I will. But once you're brown bread, not a fucking chance, because them who work in the cemeteries and the funeral homes and stuff like that, they pocket that shit.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm telling you that, because now you know.
We're just letting me know that you're not going to honour my wishes ahead of time.
Yeah.
You're trying to keep it real with me.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
So like on your deathbed, I'll be like, I will. Honest. Honest. Don't mind what I said on the podcast. Honest.
That was all for show.
Yeah.
His co-worker noted that Peter wasn't bothered at all by the morbid nature of the job. He said that when Peter needed extra cash, he would work as a mortuary assistant, cleaning the bodies and preparing the instruments which would be used for a post-mortem examination. Another time, Peter wanted to go into the mortuary to examine bodies. Quote, one night after we'd been out drinking together, he brought out a key for the mortuary and suggested we went and looked at the bodies. I didn't fancy the idea at all. Now... That's its own fucking thing.
Yeah.
Slight sideline point I want to make. There's something that both Neil and I always say And that is, we don't drink with people we don't like.
Mm.
I know of so many people who, they wouldn't go out for coffee with someone, but they'll go out drinking with them. And it's like their best mates, particularly co-workers, like in this instance, who then they'll immediately chat shit about the following day. I can't understand it. If you're hanging out with someone who said, hey, I got a key to the mortuary, you want to go look at bodies? I'd be like, fucking no. And no. I'm going home. I'm not finishing my pint.
Yeah.
Well, I'm done.
No, you finish your pint.
Well, you bring your Stanley cup or whatever with you and you pour it in, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know that to do with, you know, the job didn't seem to bother him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was someone I used to work with and I swear to God, at some point he's killed someone. Like, some of the stuff he used to say, like...
I know who you're talking about right now, don't I?
He referred to a dead corpse as meat's meat. Is that the person?
Yeah, no, I know what you're on about, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, so part of my job, one of the jobs I had, was if an animal had been hit on the motorway, I'd have to go and scrape it up. And I'd do a day shift when this other person would do the night shift. And I'd said that I really struggle when it's a cat or a dog. Don't know why, but when it's a cat or a dog, I don't even want to go near it. And he said, well, leave it for me, and because I'll scrape it up, no bother. Meat's meat. It's all the same. It don't bother me. And I'm like, that is the sort of thing a serial killer would fucking say.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean, because I think, you know, between the two of us, I can look at things as more a matter of fact at times.
Yeah.
But that doesn't still take away the humanity of it, you know what I mean? And that kind of, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be so insensitive, generally speaking, particularly if it's someone telling me that this affects me.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd ever use the phrase meat's meat.
Yeah.
Anyway, around this time that Peter was working in the graveyard, his grandmother had moved in with the family. Peter would later recall an incident while his grandmother was staying with them. He said that there was one day that his grandmother was about to walk down the stairs when he noticed that the family's kitten was sat on the top step. He called out to his grandmother, but she did not hear him or see the cat, and she accidentally stepped on the kitten's head, killing it. Peter said that he remembered hearing the sounds of the kitten's head being crushed, as well as seeing the blood coming from the cat's mouth and nose. He said that that moment scarred him for life. Less than a week later, his grandmother passed away and was buried at the cemetery where Peter worked. In 1965, Peter was involved in an accident when his motorbike hit a lamppost following a puncture. He did receive a head injury as a result and said that he went on to suffer from particularly bad headaches for a long time afterwards. Not long after this, his co-workers and drinking buddies witnessed Peter fall into a trance-like state. While sitting in the pub after work, they noticed Peter suddenly sit bolt upright and stare straight ahead. He then smashed a beer glass onto the table. He didn't explain or apologise, just nothing. Even when another drinker came over and confronted him, he just stared straight on.
Fucking weirdo. I wouldn't be drinking with him.
Like I kind of said, I don't tend to drink with people I don't get on with. And if I don't want to know you when I'm sober, I sure as fuck don't want to know you with the drink in me.
Yeah, yeah.
In 1965, Peter was let go from his job as a gravedigger due to his poor timekeeping. He regained employment as a gravedigger in June of 66, but was let go in November of 67, again due to poor timekeeping. At the age of 20, Peter met 18-year-old Trevor Birdsall. Together, they would go out drinking before heading into the red light district of Leeds and Bradford. The pair enjoyed watching the sex workers operate from the comfort of their own vehicle, but it may not have just been an interest in voyeurism.
What, like dogging and that?
I mean, kind of. They got enjoyment from watching others participate.
No, I didn't know if you meant watching them pick up
or watching them, you know?
Well, the whole shebang, I'd imagine.
Right. So the dogging.
I mean, I suppose technically, but dogging is a bit more specific, isn't it? You know?
Well,
voyeurism can be kind of different ways of doing it, whereas dogging is kind of, it's almost more arranged. There's like communities of people who are
into everyone, that. Everyone knows.
Yeah. No, they were just kind of, they were, yeah.
Well, I think that's still dogging. It's watching someone.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. Like, it kind of is.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're probably going to get a strongly worded letter from the dogging community now.
No.
I don't know.
There is a consensual aspect.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Like, you know, whether it's for you or not, as far as I'm aware, the people who are into it, they're all kind of like, you know, this is our meeting spot.
Yeah.
Everyone has their roles.
9 o'clock tonight. Roles.
Well, I mean, like, some people in dogging enjoy being the one being watched and others enjoy watching, right?
Yeah.
You're British, you tell me, because it seems a very popular thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
In the UK.
I don't know why it's so big in the UK.
I just love it.
I know some dogging spots.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Something you want to tell me or?
Oh, never been.
No.
It's just when I have been there during the day, they said.
You were only there looking for directions on how to get out of there.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I know one of them were around the back of a Lidl.
Oh.
Yeah.
Better that than an Asda.
I was at the Lidl. I was sat in the car park and I was told, oh, if you come here at night, it's the dogging spot.
So you came back that night?
I fucking did not.
So, like I said, it may have been more than just an interest in watching the sex workers operate. It's thought to be most likely that both men did also seek out the services of these women, and Peter was said to have become concerned that he may have contracted an STI. So, what do you do in that situation? STI, sexually transmitted infection.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
Right. So what's an STD?
STI is just the kind of more updated wording you would use.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. You okay?
No, it's just because I thought that was a sty.
No.
Right.
Like I said, what would you do? You're worried you may have contracted an STI. What's the first thing you do, Neil?
At a family clinic, I'd have thought.
You go get yourself checked out. Make sure everything's right.
Get umbrella treatment.
Well, I tell you what, not Peter. I tell you what Peter did. He decided to show his penis to a friend of his for a second opinion.
See, you know Sean, who's requested this?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to out him. He would do this.
Do you reckon?
Or he would ask to look at mine.
Just for bants.
If I went, I don't know what's wrong, my knob keeps itching. He'd go, let's have a look.
Whip it out.
Get it out, let's have a look.
Now, his friend Keith, who he showed his brick to.
Keith.
Keith, as you would say. Keith said, quote, it looked a mess and it certainly seemed as though he had contracted a venereal disease. I told him the best thing he could do was go to St. Luke's Hospital in Bradford and get it sorted out. I was staggered, really, because I had never seen Peter Sutcliffe bother with girls. It looked a mess.
Why would you go to hospital? They have family clinics for that.
But you can also just go and get a test done. I don't know, maybe they were near to that hospital at the time.
Mm.
Yeah. Look, at least Keith was trying to help him out.
Yeah.
You know? He wasn't saying go ask Barry over there for a second opinion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, Peter's brother, Mick, seemed to confirm that Peter went to sex workers and did so alongside his brother.
What?
Yeah. He said, quote, I suppose we were a little wild, but Peter never got into any trouble with the police. It is true, when we were younger, we had picked up prostitutes, but it was all for fun.
Family outing.
We might have been drinking and just fancied a bit of what the lads call rough. That's a bit fucking weird, Mick. I'm not going to lie.
No.
It's weird.
You don't mean rough sex, it means rough
women. No, I know what he's saying. I'm saying to go to sex workers with your sibling.
Oh, yeah.
No, the terminology is fucking disgusting. But I'm saying, what would possess you?
People say that about you, that you've gone for a bit of rough.
Who said that?
anyone who dislikes Sheffield.
That's most people. You need to be more specific. On the 14th of February, 1967, Peter met a 16-year-old girl named Sonia Sharma, and this was at a Valentine's Day disco. And Peter, he was enthralled with Sonia. He said of her, quote, "Trying to get to know her was like trying to climb Mount Everest. She was remote and unattainable. I was fascinated by her from the start."
16.
16, yeah. Now, Sonia is quite a character, shall we say. She's very to the point, said to be quite demanding, and also said to have been quite a cold person. And she let her feelings be known on the Sutcliffe family. Quote, "Peter and his sister Anne were so like their mother. The rest of the family is riffraff. I completely disassociated myself from them, always. Pete came into my world."
Oh.
Hmm.
Right.
Fucking hell, Sonia. She doesn't mince her words, anyway.
She doesn't mix them up, either.
Well, the thing is, though, in turn, the family were not too keen on her. They had picked up on her feelings towards them. So, I mean, being described as riffraff, you're probably not.
Yeah.
I believe I described people from Yorkshire as riffraff earlier, or at least you, didn't I? I'm pretty sure I used that terminology earlier.
I don't remember.
Probably, anyway. Yeah. It's very likely. In the early 70s, Sonia had moved to London while she attended Teachers Training College. While living in London, Sonia suffered a breakdown and was later transferred to a hospital in Bradford. While in this hospital, Sonia's behaviour was described as erratic, aggressive, and deeply disturbed. She was later diagnosed with schizophrenia. Through the difficulties that Sonia faced, including relapsing, Peter stood by her. On the 10th of August, 1974, Peter and Sonia married. Peter's best man at his wedding was actually someone he wasn't even particularly close with, and this was because Sonia had already told him that she did not want Trevor or his brother Mick in the wedding party. Which, to be fair, can't say that I blame Sonia on this one.
Mm.
The couple then moved in with her parents while they saved for the first home together. They did try for a baby, but were having difficulty, as well as Sonia having suffered a miscarriage. Now, I think something that really needs noting within this story is how often people associate Peter Sutcliffe with the fact that he was a lorry driver. I do myself. And of course, it's noted quite a bit due to the radius of his crimes. But it wasn't actually until 1975 that Peter took redundancy and used this payment to train as a HGV driver. Even then, a lot of his attacks, if not all, were done with the use of his own personal vehicles.
How do you mean? His own personal vehicles?
So, Peter had a red Ford Corsair and also a black Sunbeam Rapier. He also later had a Rover car. These are the cars he used to venture into these different red light districts and areas where he would attack these people.
Okay.
But I think a lot of the time we get in our head that lorry driver is out on the road, which is not actually the case, or at least for the majority of the attacks.
Right.
Now, in 1978, Peter contracted an STI. He told Sonia that he must have gotten the infection from a, quote, still warm toilet seat.
That is supposed to be a thing, though, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah. No, that's not me using it as an excuse. But that's always scared the shit out of me. I've heard that before.
Mm.
But from public toilets.
Yeah.
You can catch stuff. Like if your Mickey hat touches like the inside of the ball, you know, you don't know what touched there before.
Must be a Yorkshire thing then, huh?
What do you mean?
Well, you're just saying it's clearly something that goes around Yorkshire. Be careful with your penis around the toilet bowl.
No, I've heard it from fucking people from all over the world say it. Public toilets scare the shit out of them.
For many reasons, I'm sure. So, jumping back to 1969, there is an event in Peter's life that he sees as significant in why he went on to do what he did. Tanya was said to have been seeing another man, and in an act of retaliation, Peter picks up a sex worker. After he picks up this woman, they agree on a price of £5, with Peter giving her a £10 note on the agreement that she's going to give him change afterwards.
£5?
£5.
You know.
You think it's a good deal or...
It's fucking cheap, isn't it?
It's 1969.
Oh, yeah.
It's quite a while back. From what I gather, around £5 is kind of a standard price then.
So what would it be now, like 50?
Probably on the rest. I mean, I suppose it would depend. And obviously it depends on what service you're getting. Yeah. I don't know. As they made their way to her place, Peter said that he realised what a coarse, vulgar person she was. This put him off and he decided not to go through with it. He then told her that he did not want to go through with it and that she could keep the money, just give him the change. She asked that he drive her back to the garage where he picked her up, as she did not have the change on her. When they arrive at the petrol station, she goes inside and a larger man holding a wrench comes out. He tells Peter to drive on. He then sees the woman with another, larger guy, and they're laughing at him. He drove home with feeling a mix of emotions, outrage, humiliation, and embarrassment. 3 weeks later, Peter sees the woman who had scammed him out of his change. He asked her for his money back, but she instead was said to have publicly humiliated him by telling others in the pub about the situation. Peter said that he felt in turmoil, and he began to develop a general loathing for sex workers, that he had been pushed over the brink.
Right. Hang on. I'm going to adjust myself for this one. She's the cause of the Yorkshire Ripper.
Do you really want to say that and stick by it?
Yes.
You're actually going to fucking say that and stick. You honestly
think you knew I was going to fucking say that.
I honestly fucking didn't. That is the most ridiculous shit I've ever heard in my life.
Right. If she hadn't have robbed him, this is just my opinion. This isn't facts. This is my opinion. If she hadn't have robbed him, he wouldn't have had the resentment. He wouldn't have gone back and he wouldn't have got a taste for it.
So let me put this question to you then. Because working in sex work can be dangerous, you don't necessarily know the people you're getting into a car with, the people you're entering a room with.
Yeah.
You're saying that it's essentially a sex worker's fault if she gets attacked by said man.
No. She wasn't getting attacked.
No, but I'm asking you, is that what you're saying?
No.
Because you're saying because she did not return the change to him, that she is the cause.
Not only that, that she got bigger fucking blokes to go out with fucking, who were tooled up, to tell them to fuck off.
Right.
But what he was asking for wasn't unreasonable. He was like, look, I didn't want to go through with it. You can keep the money, just give me the change back.
Yeah.
She was still getting paid for her time.
Yeah.
You know?
No, but no one's saying what she did was right. It's a wild notion to, that's why I'm throwing that back at you, that because there can be dangers of working in sex work,
yeah,
particularly when you're not in a controlled environment.
Yeah.
You know, women often get blamed for that. The blame gets put on them. You're trying to blame this woman for scamming him out of £5.
Yeah.
You're saying that that's the cause of him deciding to go on an attack and murder.
So you don't get my logic. After that, he was humiliated, yeah?
This is what he's saying.
Well, yeah, that's all we can go off of. Yeah. So he's humiliated. He's been robbed. He's pissed. He goes back. He's, let's say he's twatted her and he's got a taste for it now. That wouldn't have happened if she'd have just given that fucking fiver.
Do you honestly believe that?
Yes. Like, you don't know.
Yeah.
But this is the start of it. He's got a taste for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think I'm going to get a lot of hate, but...
You don't care.
I'm going to say what I think.
Say what you think, but I want it noted. I think you're fucking outrageous and I do not agree with you. Okay. I think you can make anything suit your agenda if you bend it and twist it enough and place the blame in the right spots.
Well, He weren't twatting sex workers about before this.
That you know of?
Well, that, yeah. that we know of.
Also, don't forget, his entire reason for going to this woman was in retaliation because Sonia had been seeing someone else.
Yeah.
He went to have sex with another person because he felt wronged.
Yes.
So we're not in a good place.
No,
from
no,
the get-go.
I'm not saying we're in a good place, but I said what I said.
Right. So something else around this time that probably didn't do much for Peter's views on women was when he discovered that his mother, his darling mother, was having an affair. Yeah. So
someone else were pulling a skirt down.
That's not the kind of the traumatic bit for Peter so much. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it was a bit upsetting for him. The traumatic part of this situation is that his father had arranged for Peter, Sonia and his sister Maureen to meet him at a hotel. And they were confused as to why they'd been invited to meet up there. Then Peter saw his mother walk in. His father had tricked Kathleen into showing up at the hotel thinking she was meeting the man who she was having the affair with.
Oh.
Yeah. His father then proceeded to force her into admitting what she had done and pulled out lingerie which she had bought for the occasion to embarrass her. And he did this in front of his children, Sonia, and other hotel guests.
Can't lie. If you were one of the guests at the hotel, you'd be getting ringside seats for that one.
Pour the fucking tea.
Yeah.
You would be watching it, but I find this man appalling.
Yeah.
Why would, right, I personally wouldn't do that to a person. As much as you've hurt me, I don't want to publicly humiliate you.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. And why you would want to do that in front of your children is next fucking level.
Well, it's even worse now. So at that time, it was just in front of the kids and whoever was witnessing it in the hotel. Now, it's social media. It's worldwide.
Yeah.
The people video it. People video him confronting the wife for cheating.
Yeah, I can't get on board with it. Just fucking cop on, pull your socks up and deal with it.
Yeah.
Do you want to stay with them? Do you want to get rid of them? Mm. I don't fucking care. Sort it out. Move on. Get on with it. Now, let me tell you something as well. This is another feeling I have on this whole situation. So obviously, John's a bastard for doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to condone cheating. But if I was ever to turn a blind eye to someone having an affair, it would be Kathleen. You know what I mean? You got to take into account the time period that it was. Kathleen was Catholic. It's not as easy to just leave your husband and move on. Not to mention that he was in control of the finances and he also went on to have an affair in order to get back at her. Okay? Justice for Kathleen and her fancy.
Where's Jeremy Kyle when you need him?
Just let this woman have some fucking form of relief from this absolute shite hawk of a man. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Now they need a bit of Jeremy Kyle. For our Americans, that's like Jerry Springer sort of thing.
I hated Jeremy Kyle. Hated it. It was in early September of 1969 that Peter first began to curb crawl through the streets, looking for the woman who had wronged him. One night, while out with his friend Trevor, the pair were sat in Trevor's mini saloon eating fish and chips while watching the sex workers operate in the area. As you do.
Yeah.
Suddenly, Peter jumps out of the car and began to walk up the road until he was no longer in Trevor's sight. He reappeared about 10 minutes later. Trevor recalled that he looked excited, that he wasn't breathing normally, and that he had possibly been running. As they drove off, Trevor asked Peter what had happened. Peter told him that he had followed a woman to the garage and hit her over the head with a sock that he had placed a stone inside of. He then threw this sock containing the stone out of the window. The following day, the police show up at Peter's home. The woman had managed to note down Trevor's license plate, and Trevor then directed the police to Peter's address.
Yeah.
The woman ultimately decided not to press charges, but the excitement that Peter had felt, the rush of adrenaline, it wouldn't be long before Peter was actively hunting down women. So that is where we're going to leave it. Part one.
Mm.
Neil, how are you feeling right now?
Said what I said.
Oh, you said a lot.
She's the root of the Yorkshire Ripper.
That is the most bizarre, outrageous,
I think you're going to be shocked. This is going to be the kidney thing all over again. You're going to be shocked at how many people agree with me.
I really don't think so. I think this is an issue of can't take accountability. You know, I think it's wild that you're taking accountability off Peter. This isn't even about you. We always have arguments because I say you can't take accountability for stuff.
Yeah.
You look for to put blame elsewhere. Mm. Yeah. You're trying to take accountability off the Yorkshire Ripper.
Well, no, he did what he did. But yeah. I'm saying there's always a root, there's always a cause to what started it.
I get the point you're making, you know, at its core.
Yeah.
But you'll argue against that when it comes to abuse in childhood and things like that. You'll say, oh, well, you know, that's terrible, it happened, blah, 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 blah. But a woman robbing a fiver off a man, you're like, oh, well, what was he meant to do?
No.
You don't say anything like that.
I did not fucking say what was he meant to do. I was saying if that hadn't have happened, he wouldn't have got a taste for it.
Yeah, but there's still choices you make.
Yeah, there is. But she chose to not only rob him, have two blokes go out to tell him to fuck off and humiliate him.
Yeah, but okay, let's say I was in sex work, yeah?
Hmm.
Would you not prefer I had two big fuck-off blokes there to protect?
No, like, yeah, I do. But Peter wasn't doing anything. He took her back to where she wanted to go. He hadn't done anything wrong that night
her. By his account.
Yeah, by what we know.
Yeah.
So there were no need for her to fucking go out. No need for her to rob him. And there were no need for her to send two goons out.
Well, she did have to if she wanted to keep that fiver.
Well, yeah. You know, a pack of unbelief and that.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to impress a lot of people with that viewpoint. I think it's insane. And the only thing I'll say is I admire you for being brave enough to just fucking say that. That is outrageous. You're an outrageous person, Neil.
Why do I feel like this is going to backfire?
What do you mean, why do you... Of course it's going to fucking backfire.
It shouldn't fucking backfire.
Why should it not? You're blaming a woman for a man's choice to go on and murder other women. You're saying, right, even if I could get my head around your justification, you're saying the actions of one woman is enough to justify why a man felt that way to hurt any woman he came across.
No, I didn't say to justify. I did not say to justify. See, this is where you're twisting
it. When you're saying it's the cause, as if there's some type of leg for it to stand on. Do you get what I mean?
We don't know, right? This is all going by what we know has been said.
What Sudi said.
Yeah. From that, you don't know if there would have ever been a Yorkshire Ripper if he hadn't been ripped off with that fiver that night.
I feel fairly confident there would have been. You're forgetting about all the kind of the weird shit with the cemetery. And he was already into like watching sex workers operate and all this kind of weird shit.
Yeah. It's part of dogging. Yeah.
No, but it wasn't dogging. Do you know, essentially he wanted to, you know, get his kicks without paying these women. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who comment on Peter and his obsession with sex workers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
no, we 100%. I don't agree to disagree. I'm forced to disagree here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, oddity.
So for oddity, we are talking about Kaylee Muthart.
What?
A person named Kaylee.
Kaylee what?
Muthart. I may be pronouncing that wrong.
Muthart. Not Muth.
What? No.
Muthart.
Muth.
Okay.
TH. I know for you, that's a bit of a situation, but... Mm. Mm. So, Kaylee Muthart had been a straight A student and was part of the National Honour Society. But at the age of 17, Kaylee was struggling due to her working long hours to save for a car and having missed school due to her heart arrhythmia. She felt it best to leave school, take some time for herself, and this would leave her with a better chance of obtaining a scholarship to fulfill her wish of becoming a marine biologist. I would agree. It's a good idea. Take some time, sort yourself out, make sure you're good. Now, by the age of 18, as many do at that age, Kaylee was regularly drinking and smoking weed. But she suspected that she may have been prone to addiction and she chose to avoid harder drugs. Which was a good choice, especially as Kaylee has bipolar disorder, and because of her condition, her doctor told her that she was more susceptible to drug use, although at this point, she had not been diagnosed.
Right.
Now, there was one day where Kaylee was smoking weed with an acquaintance of hers. During this, she said that she got this strange high, which she said made her feel particularly close to God.
List.
Exactly. And Kaylee, she was a religious person, but in hindsight, Kaylee believed that the marijuana was laced with meth or cocaine, and this caused her to relate drugs to a religious experience. Now, when later going through a more difficult time in her life, Kaylee remembered back to how that laced weed had made her feel. And although she had previously thought that she would never venture into other drugs, she sought out something to numb the pain. Quote, "While on ecstasy, I studied the Bible. I misinterpreted a lot of it. I convinced myself that meth would bring me closer to God."
It will do if you keep taking it.
Well, this is it. Kaylee progressed from smoking meth to snorting and injecting it. She did try to stop her drug use, but obviously that's easier said than done. Her mother said, quote, "The day before it happened, which was my birthday, I was getting ready to have her committed, just to get her off the streets and away from it." The day her mother is referring to is the 6th of February, 2018. Now, this is going to be a bit graphic, and Neil, it does involve eyes.
Of course it does.
So just be prepared. While high on methamphetamine, Kaylee said, quote, "I thought everything would end abruptly, and everyone would die if I didn't tear out my eyes immediately. So I pushed my thumb, pointer and middle finger into each eye. I gripped each eyeball, twisted and pulled until each eye popped out of the socket. It felt like a massive struggle, the hardest thing I ever had to do. Because I could no longer see, I didn't know if there was blood, but I know the drugs numbed the pain. I'm pretty sure I would have tried to claw right into my brain if a pastor hadn't heard me screaming. He later said when he found me that I was holding my eyeballs in my hands. I'd squished them, although they were somehow still attached to my head."
And this is our oddity.
Yeah. You need to know the dangers of drugs.
I don't.
You all right?
Yeah.
When help arrived, Kaylee was combative and had to be sedated with ketamine before being airlifted to the hospital. After being treated in the hospital for her physical injuries, as well as being formally diagnosed and being treated for her mental health, Kaylee seems to be doing a lot better and has said, quote, "Of course there are times I get really upset about my situation, particularly on nights when I can't fall asleep. But truthfully, I'm happier now than I was before all this happened. I'd rather be blind than dependent on drugs."
You could just have your eyes and not be dependent on drugs.
You could, but like I said, she was going through a hard time. A lot of people turn to something to help them out.
She had something once and went back to it.
What do you mean?
She bought weed.
Yeah.
What had definitely been laced.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, "Oh, do that again."
No, but not at the time. At the time, she wasn't thinking that. It was afterwards. You know, she was having a tough time. Her relationship had ended. You know, there was just a lot of stuff going on for her. And it wasn't so much like, "I want these drugs." It was, "I remember how I felt in that moment." And, you know, like you said, she was a particularly religious person. So that feeling of being close to God for her.
Right, but like, so I've had weed what were laced at least once.
Yeah, and you said the experience was horrifying for you.
Yeah, not once in my life have I looked back and gone, oh, you know what?
Yeah, but you had such a negative experience. She did not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Hmm. Yeah.
It's just, it's awful that it happened, but it's also quite interesting that she looks at it. You know, she has such a kind of positive way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Like, you can't imagine doing that to yourself. And I don't want to harp on it too much because I know the eye thing with you.
Yeah.
But you can't fathom doing that to yourself.
Hmm.
Yet she did.
You could have just said, ripped her eyeballs out. You didn't have to fucking...
No, those are her words, you know? Like, she's the person who did this to herself.
She can fuck off and all then.
Hmm.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
If you like your true crime like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.